Thank you for that introduction. We're going to be talking about shot quality and how it's affected by ball eye, if it is actually affected by ball eye. And just before I get into it, I want to say this is a very fun study to do and love to repeat it. And we'd love to have more come down and hit some balls for us. Well, first, what is ball eye? Well, ball eye is simply where your golf ball ends up after you hit a shot. So the position in the canopy, how much ball is exposed, that's simply what ball eye is. And you can see we have some examples of what you might find on a golf course. Everything from fairway all the way to deep rough. Now, ball eye is important, or has become important here in recent years, because we started measuring it. We found a way to measure it. And then we use that as a comparison amongst different cultivars of the same species. So, if we're using it as comparison, what does it really mean? Is it really that important? Should we use it for selection criteria? Well, what we found, or at least in the literature, if you read any golf course magazine, you're going to see that if you have a bad ball eye, as when I play golf, this is typically what I see, you have decreased carry distance. There's stuff in between the ball and the club. You have reduced backspin, or what they call a flyer, which simply means there's grass in between the ball and the club. The grooves aren't able to contact the ball. You have reduced accuracy, so you're going to be more off-center, and you have lower shot trajectory. And this is, I find this all the time when I play, so I just wanted to confirm it using scientific method. How do we measure ball eye? Well, we use digital image analysis and methods based on Richardson et al. In 2010. Basically, we use a digital camera with a frame to take an image of a golf ball, and we use Sigma Scan to determine the number of pixels visible out of the total number of pixels we determine from a ball on a tee. So you can see in the top picture, there's the ball that we laid out, took a picture of, and there's the Sigma Scan of it at the bottom. So we started doing this, and just to give you an idea, when I talk about various ball eyes, this is what you're going to see. 97% in the top left corner, going all the way to 5% in the bottom right corner. I see more 5%ers than I do 90%ers when I play. But just to give you an idea, a reference of what we're talking about. Now, our materials and methods, we had three turfgrass species. And we ranged the heights over what you would typically find on a golf course. Everything from a fairway cut all the way into what you might consider a short natural area. So we had creeping bent grass at 1.3 centimeters, and we did that at 0, 3, and 5 days after mowing. We know at at 1.3 centimeters, roughly half an inch, that we get somewhere in the mid-90s on ball eye. Well, we wanted to get, you know, maybe some high 90s, some low 90s, so we went directly after mowing, 3 days prior after mowing, and 5 days after mowing. So we get a kind of a range there in the 90s. We used Kentucky bluegrass, and we ranged the heights everything from, say, a kind of a high fairway cut all the way into a high rough cut. And then we used tall fescues for that high rough, even to some really thick stuff. The fescue was tough. And we had two golfers, a 0 and an 8 handicapper. We wanted more, and we heard rumors that a former technician was a single-digit handicapper, but we couldn't confirm it. Never could find his USGA card, so we ended up with just two. So continuing on our materials and methods, we used 5 shots per plot. Now, each golfer had his own plot, and it was large enough to where none of his previous shots would affect him. They drop balls from shoulder height, similar to taking a drop in golf. We had a randomized shot and golfer order based upon turfgrass species. Our turfgrass species were kind of spread out on the farm, so instead of moving all our equipment back and forth, we just stuck with one species, finished that one up, and then moved on. Golfers might hit, you know, one and then the other. They may hit several in a row. They might hit out of, you know, the shortest height to the highest height right afterwards. You know, it was just randomized. And we tried to simulate golf playing conditions. Now, how do we measure these ball flights? We didn't get out there with a wheel and walk off every one of them. We used a FlightScope Kudu 3D Doppler radar system. The guy that made this was doing defense contracts, making missile tracking software, retired and decided to get into golf. Now, it does actual true measurements of the golf ball as it's flying. So as long as it can see the ball, it's measuring it. And it goes for carry distance, lateral distance, shot height, and a million other parameters, that most of which I don't really understand. There's several in there. Fortunately, we had the golf coach with us, and he was kind of explaining some of them. But, I mean, it just gives you a whole buku of information. And you can see this is one of our golfers, our zero handicapper, hitting shots from one of the lower Kentucky bluegrass heights. And that little box at the bottom is the actual flight scope. So some of the information that the flight scope gave us, this is an actual screenshot, and this is our 8 handicap golfer. And you get to see all of his ball flights, and you get to see the lateral distance. So you've got from the side and from the top. And here it gives you average backspin, average side spin, the average carry distance. Those are all actual true measurements within a couple percent accuracy. It also estimates roll and like a total distance, but those are based upon parameters like how firm we think the ground is, things like that, what type of ball we're using. So we weren't really concerned with that. We just wanted the actual measurements. It would also tell us, you know, how accurate these guys were. So how far away were they hitting from our target? The red is our zero handicapper, as you might expect, and the blue is our 8 handicapper. So still very accurate, just a little bit outside the zero handicapper. And kind of what you expect. You play golf with these guys, they're both really, really good. So what are the data did we find? Well, we found, just as we expected, that carry distance is going to be reduced if you have a really thick, poor ball lie. If your ball's sitting in the rough, it's not going to go as far as you would if hitting from the fairway. We used a linear regression model. On the x-axis, you've got the ball lie in percent. On the y-axis, you have carry distance in meters. The 8 handicap golfer is the red dots, the zero handicap in the black. Now, we had an average carry distance of 146 meters, roughly 159 yards for you golfers. And we had significance in ball lie. The only problem was that we couldn't explain all the variability with this model. There's so much going on with a golf swing. You know, the swings just aren't the same every time. So, yeah, we've got significance, but we can't just sit down and go, okay, well, it's 5% ball lie. You're going to hit it, you know, 7 meters shorter than you would if it was, you know, 30% ball lie. It's just not going to be able to work that way. It's all dependent on how you swing, how good you are. Backspin, everybody knows that, you know, you can't get those grooves on the ball, not going to spin as much. Well, that's what we found here. So as ball lie decreased and ball lie gains on the x-axis, backspin and rotations per minutes on the y-axis, 8's red, the 0 is black. Again, backspin decreased as ball lie decreased. Couldn't get that spin that you need, can't stop the ball. And we're looking at average backspin of 2,363 rotations per minute. Again, our ball lie in our model is significant, but we're not explaining a lot of the variability. Our R-squared value being 0.11, it's just not very good. But again, golf swing's variable. Accuracy, now this is lateral distance off the center line. So we've got ball lie, our percentage on the x-axis, lateral distance in meters on the y-axis, and our color dots stayed the same. You're looking at 7 meters average distance being off of the center line. And this isn't just for, say, right of the center line or left of the center line. We weren't concerned with direction. We were just concerned with accuracy. So how close were they? And that's in a straight line. So if they went past, it didn't matter. It was whether they were off to the right or the left. Again, we have significance with our ball lie. But R square is still not very good. We're not explaining a lot of the variability there. Finally, we go to shot height, and typically shot heights are a lot lower hitting out of the rough. So your percent ball lie is on the x-axis, your shot height again is on the y-axis. Dots have stayed the same. As ball lie increases, you can see the trend that so does shot height. So you're hitting a nice high soft shot, and that may partially be something to do with the amount of backspin that you're capable of putting on the ball at a better ball lie. Significant again, still not explaining much of the variability with R square of 0.1. So what does this all mean? Well, it means that ball lie does have an effect, just as we expected, just as everyone that hits out of the rough will find out. So your carry distance is shorter, you have less backspin, you have less accuracy, you have lower shot height if you're in the rough. I mean, pretty simple, That's what we found out. We also noticed that ball eye alone can't be used as a predictor, but it does mean something. So a grass that can't hold up the ball as well as another grass is going to be important selection criteria once you get past all those growth parameters. So if you got two very similar cultivars, you might use this to help differentiate between the two. And what do we need to do? Well, we need to do some additional regression analysis. Our models, although significant, they still didn't really explain a lot of the variability. Some of the data you can see that we possibly need to do some segmented regressions. So from 0 to 20% on ball eye, maybe look at the regression there, break it down into those categories, because you know, once you're up in the 90s range, really between 90 and 100, there's not a whole lot of difference as far as what the golfer is going to experience. And then we'd like to continue testing on higher handicap golfers. These guys, these low handicaps, may just be so good that, you know, ball eye really doesn't affect them as much as, say, it does me or somebody that has a higher handicap. So if any of y'all want to volunteer and you're in this range, please do. Have any questions? Yes, sir.
Did you try using a covariant of swing speed or a backspin within the different handicaps that you might get better data?
We did not. But we'll go back and look at it. And again, we've only had two golfers like to add some more in there and really, really get a whole bunch more data and see what we've got. Yes, ma'am.
In some cases, it looked like the better golfer was much closer to your line than the poor golfer. Have you separated out the two golfers in your analysis?
Did we separate out the two golfers? We looked at it visually, did a bunch of scatter plots of all our data, and just got to the point and said, well, we'd like to, you know, kind of see the both of them together, and that's where we saw our significance. Yes, sir.
You talked about the variables of the swing. Have you considered trying to do the same type of work with a machine that will produce the same swing every time?
Oh, we would love to. Should we use a machine that can produce the same type of swing? We'd love to. And if the USGA would ever invite us up to use their Iron Byron, I think we've already ready to get plane tickets. So. Yes, sir.
I may have missed this, but what club were you using, like an 8-iron?
Oh, I didn't mention that. We were actually using a 7-iron.
So, I know personally, I can't hit a 4-iron out of the rough, but I can hit a 7-iron out of the rough. So, you know, I think if you switch 4-iron, 7-iron wedge, you might get some interesting data as well.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. And we just, you know, doing this the first time, this is the first time anybody's ever done any of this stuff. We figured start with a mid-iron, something that folks are comfortable hitting them with, and see what happens. Yes, sir.
So what if you did, what would you expect your results to be or anticipate if you were at the same height with different lines as opposed to across? You've got a lot of things going on variability-wise with different mowing heights and speeds. So if you were...
I mean, perhaps it may change. It could get worse though. If I'm sitting a ball up high in a canopy and gently placing it there so it stays up and I've got a lot of ball exposed, then you might see some guys start hitting under it. You bury it deep to get those. I mean, instead with this, you've got, you know, the ball staying relative in the basically the same position that it would be found. I think if you start trying to float them up on top of some of that high stuff, we're going to really get some pop-ups, that sort of thing. Yes, sir.
Do you know the retail price of the shot tracker?
It's $12,000. That includes the flight scope, a computer, I think a camera, a nice carrying case, and a battery backup. Yes, sir.
What effect would winter rules have?
Well, I play winter rules all the time, so it helps me out tremendously, I promise. I also have a great foot wedge, so I can make it back into that shorter grass.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.